Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, June 20th, 2017, and we've got some great guests joining us today at Heritage Radio Network. We'd like to welcome to the show. Everybody, introduce yourselves.
Hey, Lou Bryson, freelance beer writer, whiskey writer, you know.
Lou Bryson missed everything, and today on our show, we're going to tackle a big subject, but we're going to fine-hone it. We're going to talk about the Evil Empire's acquisition of homebrew supply chain, and we wanted Lou on board just to give his, like, full perspective. And you've been covering beer for how many years, 25, 30 Ooh, years?
Yeah, about 25 years.
Yeah, so you're kind of our beer expert on the show, and then our good buddy from Bridge and Tunnel.
Yeah, Rich. How you doing, Jimmy?
Rich Castagna. This show was your idea, wasn't it?
Yeah. The last time that we were here, we got talking about this stuff. It was right when Wicked Weed had sold, and we talked. Next thing you know, we're talking about doing another show.
And then we also got a homebrew shop owner.
How you doing? This is Pete from Homebrews and Hand Grenades.
Pete Tripp, man. So, yep. You know, basically the show, you know, Richie inspired it last month. And, you know, over the past month, as the Evil Empire bought up Wicked Weed and Rape Beer, and we learned about that, we decided we're going to go beyond that and talk about the impact of some of these large corporations and takeovers on the homebrew supply chain. So, Richie, give us a little background on why we're talking about this, the online homebrew companies that you're referencing, and then Pete, you join in too. You know, you've got that little neighborhood homebrew shop. So,
yeah. So,
try and tell a story that hasn't been told in the regular media.
There's been a number of developments recently, more than one, but one of them was, you know, on behalf of AB InBev and including purchasing of Rate Beer, developing an online a hard copy magazine called October, what they're doing with Condé Nast, purchasing 10 former craft breweries, and now purchasing Northern Brewer / Midwest Brewing Supplies, which is the largest online homebrew supply company in the United States. It's all been happening within about 6 months. A number of these purchases have happened, but it started about 2 years ago. So
with the homebrew supply chain, you know, and Pete, tell us a little introduction on your end, and Lou, join in. You know, why is that such a big deal? You know, are a lot of people buying their homebrew supplies online?
They've always been there. Northern Brew has always been there. But as in regards to like that whole AB InBev acquirement of that company, When I first heard that this was going on, I was like, well, this could be either really good or really bad for me, because, you know, a lot of people that do homebrew are craft forward and they try to support that whole craft scene. And they could be like, well, I'm not going to buy from Northern Brewer anymore because they're acquired by, I guess, the quote unquote evil giant. But, you know, it's also tough, too, because, you know, I get the emails every day from Northern Brewer and Midwest. It's like, well, get it from us because you're going to get a whole bunch of free stuff. So they have that buying power.
If I could just to clarify, you're not buying from Northern Brewer.
No, I'm not buying from Northern Brewer.
Yeah, this is strictly this is like a one customer at a time thing for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you're not buying bulk from them as well as they're selling retail to other people.
No, they're retail.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not actually as a matter of fact, I'd say like a year and a half, Northern Brewer reached out to me and they were looking to do, look into the whole wholesale part for stuff that is exclusive that they produce, and the numbers that they were giving me were like, well, you have to buy a whole pallet and you're only going to make $6 on like a $50 item. And they were like, well, you can upcharge it for $10 and have it in your shop. And I was like, so I have to charge more, you know, charge more so I look like a scumbag and you look like the saints. And it's like, yeah, well, free shipping on this thing that your local homebrew shop is now carrying, and they're not making any money on it. But
Pete, let's step back. So, you know, we're going to try to set a little more framework for the show. So,
sure.
Pete, tell us how you started your homebrew shop, because that's one of the people forget just how important the homebrew movement was to the growth of craft beer. Sure. Lou, a lot of brewers that you know,
a lot of brewers started out that way. Yeah, I mean, there's a homebrew shop in Philly, Home Sweet Homebrew. I can't remember how many of the Philadelphia area breweries and brew pubs. I mean, they started by brewing a batch from
the stuff they got from them. 1979, President Jimmy Carter made homebrewing legal.
Well, you know, it's interesting on that time frame, and I'll make this real quick, but, you know, now we have 5,300 breweries plus, but it's not a first in the States. In 1873, we had 4,100 breweries plus, and it took 100 years to get to the 1970s where we only had 44 breweries. And the projection for the end of the decade of the 1980s was that there was only going to be four breweries left in the United States: Anheuser-Busch, Miller, Coors, and Pabst Brewing Company. And if it wasn't for the home brewers that basically took the industry back, we wouldn't have craft beer in the United States. It was the home brewers in the 70s that then started creating small microbreweries in the 1980s. I mean, the first microbrewery, you know, started in, there were eight microbreweries in the United States in 1980, and they were all former homebrewers.
You know, in New York City, just a few years ago, there were at least two or three different homebrew shops, and now there's only one, Bitter and Esther's. That's more of a classroom and a happening place. You know, tell us what's the role. You're in Baldwin, New York, right? Long Island?
Yeah.
Tell us the role of your homebrew shop and some of the things that you do there.
Sure. I mean, so I guess the running joke of my shop now, it's become like the barbershop. You know, people come in and because of the shop, I mean, not to pat myself on the back, but there was really not much going on in Nassau County in regards to like a craft beer homebrew kind of scene. And people come in and people hang out. Everyone's all friends now. It even stemmed into like a homebrew club. We have like, you know, 200 members. We actually have a meeting tonight. And, you know, we're getting 40 to 60 people coming in and everyone's friends, like people from like all walks of life. So I think my favorite part of owning the shop is just the community that stemmed out of it. Everyone's friends. Like yesterday, I actually had some free time, and I reached out to a couple guys in the club. I'm like, hey, I got actually like 4 hours. Let's go check out this brewery that opened up in Freeport, and a couple guys hanging out. So, and this would have never happened like 4 years ago.
Been there.
You know, talking about local beers and, you know, small breweries, you brought in a local brew pub.
Yeah, I live down in Bucks County, north of Philly. This is the closest brewery to me. This is from the Vault in Yardley, Pennsylvania. It's their New Zealand IPA. You know, it's not obvious to you, but it's unfiltered. It's pretty cloudy. I just had a draft of it while I was having this filled this morning. I just had this filled this morning at about 11:30. And it's really fresh.
I'll get a top off on that.
Yeah, right.
And Richie, what do you? And again, you know, talking about, you know, the anti corporate, you know, being. You know, Richie, to me, you're one of my favorite New York City brewers. You know, you're doing a lot of things hands on, and you know, to me, you're like what a craft brewer is.
Thanks.
How do you taste this beer?
I think you can see that it's not a refined beer, and I think that lends to more flavor.
Yeah.
It's right up my alley. I love that. You know.
I know, it's tough, isn't it?
Fancy, Pete, you know how to. There's all these fancy growlers.
We got one of these, one of the double walled steel ones, and it's.
Jeez Louise.
I'll tell you what, man, they're built to keep the carbo in, really? You know?
we're struggling to open this fancy growler. But, you know, the show, I guess, is a reaction to, you know, Wicked Weed being bought. And the last time Richie was on, he talked about the homebrew supply.
I loosened it up. You know,
I don't. We're going to get there and talk more about it. But I also wanted to say, you know, I've been reading about this issue lately. And Jeff Allworth, who I think is a great writer, based in the Pacific Northwest, he was on our show not too long ago, a year and a half ago. And he wrote something about the moral issue of why people, you know, don't like the big corporate takeovers and they want to support craft. And I just want to say a few things. I'm going to read what he said. He said, the age of consolidation has surfaced one of the more unusual quirks of the American craft beer segment, the strange morality that has come to pervade it. There's really no other word either. Morality is that agreement among groups about what is acceptable. It's kind of like he's talking about a tribe. You know,
that's when you used the word tribal when we were talking before the show, that really hit a nerve with me. I think it is like that.
We're a tribe, and I want to see guys like Richie busting his ass, working hard, hurting himself,
and then rewarding
and making good
it.
Beer. And I want to meet guys like Pete who are still like struggling to keep a homebrew shop going instead of just getting people to buy online. But that's a whole bigger thing. It's like we want to go to shops. We want to meet real people. We want places to gather. We don't want to do everything online.
But you know what's interesting about that? Like, aside from it...
But we want to listen to podcasts online.
Right, there you go.
You can listen to a podcast while you're cutting the grass or doing the dishes.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, aside from it being a tribe, because that makes it kind of nostalgic kind of thing, I mean, if you look, he mentioned consolidation, and how many industries has it happened in the United States? And it happened in the beer industry as well.
Yeah.
And it's like... You know, now some people say, oh, I don't think that could really happen. We're a cohesive group. We're kind of a passive cohesive group. But it already had happened in the States of breweries being reduced, you know, down to 44. You know, and now the chess pieces are kind of being purchased. And it could very well happen all over again.
Well, you're right. It's funny. I'm glad I read it out loud. And, Rich, you have a good ear because you picked up on the age of consolidation and whatever anyone's talking about, last year's election, whatever industry went through consolidation, you know, there's big profits to the big guys. And in the end, not just the workers, but us as consumers, we suffer. You know, we have fewer real choices.
You know, though, on the other hand,
fewer chances
of
community.
The consumer has power on this, too. Because, I mean, I think the consumer has as much credit for this as the producer does. You know, because it's... Right. They have not been getting a lot of push on this. I mean, because it's the wholesalers that make the market in beer, and they didn't on this one. It was us. It was the drinkers that made it, because we kept asking. I remember back in the early 90s, like I said, I've been in this about 25 years. I remember talking to bar owners, you know, bring this beer in. It was at that time down in Philly, it was Dock Street Amber. I'm like, could you get that in? And the guy's like, nah, it doesn't sell. I'm like, well, did you ever get any? He said, no, I don't get any because it doesn't sell. Like, well, duh. If you don't have it, you can't sell it.
Right.
You know, and they'd get it in and sell like crazy. And that's what did it, because we were pulling at it.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because, like, if we think of we as a tribe, we're going all the way back to the homebrewers in the 70s. Those were our, you know, our patriarchs and matriarchs that started this environment in the first place. And it's like... you know, it's like, continue, man. I don't want to go too far.
No, the only thing is, I don't want to get, I mean, I think this is, I mean, we may be coming to a crisis point, but I don't want to overblow it because, I mean, again, the 25 years thing, I've been hearing scary stories about what the big breweries are going to do to us for 25 years, and what happens? Craft beer kicks ass. I mean, they just keep winning, and I think we're going to overcome this too.
But I think also what
it ain't going to be easy.
What I'll say without trying to sound too sweeping is that we, of all these other industries that have consolidated, we are maybe one of the few industries that actually took an industry back. We took the industry back from grassroots, and it's And it really is in the power of, that's the optimistic angle on all this, is that we took it back in the first place and we can retain it if we become more and more vocal about it. Frankly, like the way Sam Calleone just did a couple of weeks ago when he came out.
Pulled on Rate Beer.
On Rate Beer and called him out and basically said, I want everything taken off of Rate Beer. Sam Calleone is one of those patriarchs. He's somebody that leads, and we need more higher profile leaders.
That's awesome. We're off to a great start. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Heritage Foods USA is a farm-to-table online butcher and founding sponsor of Heritage Radio Network.
Heritage Foods got its start when Patrick Martin's first stepped foot onto Frank Reese's Kansas farm in 2001. Back then, Frank was the only farmer in America raising true heritage turkeys with recorded lineages tracing back more than 150 years.
Patrick knew instantly he'd found a unique moment, an opportunity to go beyond acknowledging these breeds as being jeopardized and to actually do something to save them. Patrick asked Frank to ramp up production and made a promise to him that if he would raise them, Heritage Foods USA would sell them.
That was the moment that Heritage Foods' slogan, "Eat them to save them," was born. By creating a market for delicious meats from heritage breeds, we can ensure they'll be around for generations to come.
Plus, heritage breeds just taste a whole lot better. Learn more at heritagefoodsusa.com and use the code HERITAGERADIO for 2 free pork chops with your first order, brother.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, you know, while you listen to that little ad, we're game planning the rest of the show. And then this is a big issue for us tackling this. We should try to talk more about individual stories, and this is the first time we've really tackled like a bigger, you know, macro issue. But so Richie and Lou, you guys were talking about, so Rate Beer was also bought by the Evil Empire.
Well, but ZX Ventures, they're an arm. Which is kind
tentacle.
Of interesting.
We prefer tentacle.
Tentacle. Yeah. And they define themselves as disruptive growth.
But my thing is, what if I don't even go to Rate Beer? Like, honestly, like, as a lot of these beers have been acquired, you know, or, you know, whatever it's called, the consolidation, often I'm like, well, I never really bought that anyways. I mean, I guess I'm so hyper-local and hyper-focused on craft. It's like I never went to Rate Beer once. I mean, I go to Beer Advocate, but I also... A lot of times it pops up when I'm looking at a beer menus, which is based out of New York City, and those are my guys. So, I mean, but so Sam Calagione, why did he get so upset about AB InBev owning Rate Beer?
If I could throw in on this, because I don't go to Rate Beer either. I mean, I went to it occasionally. I went to it more than you did, I guess, but. Probably, I mean, it's kind of like cigarettes. I think I've smoked 20 cigarettes in my life. That's probably about the Rate Beer ratio for me.
And Lou's wife's here. Get her on the mic. Lou, is that true? Kathy, is that true that your husband only smoked 20 cigarettes?
I didn't actually realize he smoked beer. Or smoked beer, yeah. Smoked
yeah, I don't. Never I do do smoked beer. Anyway, so Rate Beer, I mean, I don't think they're... I mean, there was, as soon as people were saying that they bought Rate Beer, the first thought people had was they're going to juice the ratings for their own beers. I don't think that's at all it at all, and I think that's, you know, that would be a bad idea for them. I think what they're doing, they're looking for the information, they're looking for the marketing information, they're looking for like who wants what, who likes what,
trends.
Yeah, exactly. Because I know, which is what
they ignored in the 80s. 70s,
I know
and
Ken 80s. Weaver, another beer writer. Worked with Rate Beer. He used to flex those numbers all the time and get some really interesting information out of that data. And I think that's what they're really buying. And I think Sam is actually dead on the money with this, because I got to tell you, if I was a guy who had a bunch of reviews on Rate Beer and I knew that AB was now going to be using my data to plot, I don't know, world domination, I'd be kind of pissed.
You know, at some point, how many breweries do you think that they'll buy? Like, Richie, tell me about one of the breweries you mentioned, 10 Barrels, is expanding around the country.
Well, you know, yeah, they have 10 right now. But you figure maybe that's enough. They're big breweries.
Yeah, I think maybe five more would do it.
Yeah, because you figure if every brewery...
What did 10 Barrel do? They open some...
Well, what they did was... Just like as little indicators of what is coming, what could be coming. It's like And the idea is, like, is it better to be cautious? And I would say it probably is. And in the case with 10 Barrel, all right, and we're talking about in the context of consolidation, all right, what do we see in the United States all over the place? You want to get some kind of you want to get a doorknob that broke. You'd be hard-pressed to find an independently owned hardware store these days, right?
Truth.
Everything is a retail outlet, right? Chains. What they did with 10 Barrel
if your doorknob breaks, you just buy a whole new door.
Right, there you go. Well, but who do you have to go to, right? Who do you have to go to?
Lowe's, so, Home Depot.
Exactly.
Amazon. That's
right.
About it.
Right. So what 10 Barrel is based in Portland. 2 weeks ago, they opened a brew pub in San Diego basically infuriated the San Diego Brewers Guild. And they also have plans to open another brew pub in Denver. So what we're starting to see, and they're actually these same techniques is what they're employing in China. So they're testing things out in China where there are fewer regulations. They've already bought two breweries in China, AB InBev, microbreweries. But what they did was they opened this brew pub in prime real estate in San Diego, which other breweries might not be able to afford the real estate, right? And basically now, like, are paving the way to what you might speculate could be chain breweries around the United States.
So it's like Trader Joe's. They're coming in. They get the best store.
Yeah.
Even if people say, I like to shop local. I'm involved in a small business community in the East Village in New York City, and we had a big hearing last week about zoning. And one woman said, you know, I'd like to go to this local organic market where I know everything's really good, but I can afford to go to Trader Joe's. So there is definitely, they create market inefficiencies.
Right.
It's kind of like the way Walmart took over America.
Yep. Exactly.
I think that's really what it's about. It's about where you want to shop. The average person only has so much money to spend. And if you buy something for a few dollars left, people say, I'll go to Trader Joe's and buy the $2 Chuck, which is their wine.
Right.
It's hard to compete.
And let's say in Pete's context, I mean, again, to lean on the side of caution, I mean, if Northern Brewer, it kind of pains me to even say it, because it's almost like saying the wrong thing that you shouldn't say, but who's to stop, the biggest, macro brewing entity in the world from opening up chain homebrew shops?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, how about this? Let's take a step back. Let's talk about, the importance of homebrew shops. You know, do most people buy their homebrew supplies? Because there's millions of, like, just this past weekend, a big shout out to American Homebrew Association. They had their national annual conference in Minnesota. And again, some of the homebrewers that win those awards are some of the best brewers in America.
Right.
Our friend Pete Salmon, who is one of the top brewers at Other Half, just a couple years ago, he and his pals, they won the best beer at the AHA.
Well, there's talk about
this. There's millions of Americans homebrewing. Where do they buy their supplies?
Well, let's say whether they buy from Pete. Here's the thing. If they wrestle control of who they're buying it from, so that now it's from Northern Brewer, and there's talk about this online. Maybe it's slightly a conspiracy theory, but again, the idea, as if you said before, with Rate Beer, you're gathering information.
Yeah.
If you're buying net, what is the most valuable thing, aside from possibly being able to take over a billion-dollar industry per year, you're also
buying what people are buying.
You have sales invoices. You have the trends of what people are, ingredients, the beers that they're producing. That's the easiest way to keep your ear to the ground.
This is how retail works. I mean, my wife and I are working on a house, and I was looking at light fixtures, and I went to a news story on CNN this morning, and there's light fixtures ads in my news feed, and that's what they're doing.
Right.
They're looking to get that kind of data.
Right.
And said, look, oh, here, you were looking at malt. We have malt. This is malt, our malt for sale. Wouldn't you like that right now?
Right.
Yeah, that's.
And what's interesting? Like I said before, this company that bought, I mean, we're not talking about this company, but AB InBev bought.
Yeah, go ahead. Northern, it's not Voldemort. Go ahead and say that.
bought Northern Brewer under this arm, this tentacle.
Harry Potter era is over. Now it's back to school. Evil Empire.
They bought Northern Brewer under their arm called ZX Ventures, right? And this is interesting stuff. ZX Ventures is self-described as a disruptive growth investment company. Now, what the hell does that mean? In disruptive growth or in disruptive innovation? It's kind of interesting, man. And talk about conspiracy theories. It's a term that is basically generated by a Harvard business school professor, this guy Clayton Christensen. And it's the idea that you come into an industry and use techniques that they've never used before, and you basically take the industry over, and anybody that was previously in the industry is left to do, like, to, you know, go find yourself some other way to make a living. And the examples of exactly what this is like, frankly, replacing record stores with iTunes, replacing taxis with Uber. Now, how about like it's thinking out of the box to take over an industry.
I do miss record stores, you know?
Yeah.
Tower, that was a cool thing.
Tower Records went down because of consolidation.
Here's actually a real test of who knows which breweries are owned by AB InBev and which aren't. So, Pete, you proudly brought us a special Long Island beer. So let's tell us what this beer is, because it's pretty good.
Yeah. So it was
Long Island Craft Beer Week.
Long Island Craft Beer Week, which was a couple of weeks ago. It was a collaboration brew. It was a red ale. It was done by several different breweries in Long Island, 1940s in Holbrook.
So it says it's called Long Island Craft Beer Week, which just happened.
Yeah.
The Craft Cares, which is a great idea. So, you know, this shows how cool brewers are. How did you get this can? Would it trade in some old coats or something?
So how this would, you know, actually signed on to participate with Long Island Craft Beer Week.
He didn't give an old coats, but
yeah, I didn't. It was two cans of food for a can of beer. So I got several cases and
deal.
And craft beers. You know, people came in. They brought in two cans of food that went to a food kitchen, and they got a can of beer. And it was collaboration from several different breweries. And I'll read them off. But 1940s in Holbrook.
But it says Long Island Craft Beer Week.
Yeah. Which was,
so the breweries that participated in this are?
It's 1940s in Holbrook, Port Jefferson.
Our buddies, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brick House Brewery, Barrage, Sand City, Spider Bite, Twin Fork, Great South Bay.
And
Blue Point.
Okay. Oh!
So which of those beers is not a craft brewery and is owned by AB InBev?
The last one. But here's my point on all that. You guys have phones, okay? If I have to be honest, I don't have signal. But if I typed in...
Because you're from Pennsylvania.
Oh, stop it. If I typed in who owns or who makes Blue Point beer, Google will tell me in under 5 seconds Anheuser-Busch. It will. I've done this a number of times. So my point is, if people care, they can find out.
Right.
The problem is, and the problem with, you know, I was thinking this when you were talking about the 10-barrel thing in San Diego. Most people don't care.
Well, I'm gonna add something to that.
Yeah.
There was a guy that put the word out. He did a GoFundMe, right, when they were going to open. And I think they opened May 27th.
The beer, Long Island Craft Beer Week, Craft Cares Red Ale. Yeah. So, you know, we had that. Okay.
Cool. All right, I'll say it quick.
And that was really malty.
And roasty.
Yes.
Roasty red.
There you go. So there was a guy that took particular offense to 10-barrel opening and actually the San Diego Brewers Guild really took interest in this, you know. But there was a guy that basically, he did a GoFundMe, and he wanted to charter an airplane with a banner. And the banner was to say 10-barrel is not craft beer. And he did a GoFundMe. He needed $900, and he ended up raising over $4,000 for it. And he flew that plane for 3 hours over there. They did a block party event. He flew it over their space for 3 hours. 10-barrel is not craft beer. And now he has an extra $3,000 that he said he's going to save it for other shenanigans like
this. I would
this.
Put up a
billboard. And I just want to say, I don't usually talk about this on this show, but I like to say that, you know, some of the brewers that we know, like Port Jeff, you know, out in Long Island, they do make good beer, and I like this beer.
Oh yeah,
no, it's solid.
You know, for me, it's also like it's becoming confusing. Like
it is.
The other day we're planning an event for it's July Good Beer Month in New York City. It'll be the ninth year in July. Every year we host a tasting gathering panel at WNYC's Green Space, and we love doing it. This year it's going to be July 19th with Jeff O'Neill from Industrial Arts Brewing and John Siegel from Siegel Hop Branch. It's going to be a nice conversation about hops and beers, and it'd be cool. I got an email from someone, I'm going to say Devil's Backbone. They said we want to participate in that, and I thought, oh, wow, I know that name. I know that must be a cool brewery, and I looked it up online, and I realized that it also had been acquired by AB InBev. And
yep.
I actually had to say, well, you know, it's. I mean, honestly, it's like, do you want to get involved with the money? But you're not a craft brewery, so we really can't consider you. And these are very complicated times because how do I turn my back on, you know, I was friends with Greg Hall and Goose Island. And
I got to tell you, I'm good friends with the brewer at Devil's Backbone, Jason Oliver. Known the guy for years, followed him through several craft breweries.
Friends with Virtue Cider. You know, so many of these breweries we've been friends with. We had Wicked Weed on the air just a couple of years ago. And it is very complicated, but it's like you have to draw a line in the sand at some point. And that's what I think. And I think that this show is about, it's called Drawing a Line in the Sand, because I want to, it's like we said earlier about, what was the industry I mentioned? I can't remember now. It wasn't pharmacies. It wasn't hardware stores. It was
hardware stores.
It was all these things.
It was
pharmacies, hardware stores, coffee bars.
Well, and see, that's the other thing. You know, which industries do you care about? You know? What hotels do you go to? Because there are websites out there that will let you find a mom and a pop hotel where you go.
Music stores,
record stores. That's
one. Yeah.
And you know,
I mean, I do go to. We have a local one place hardware store in the town where I go. I go there as often as I can.
Yeah.
Hell, I buy soap there.
You know, though, like, I mean, what's again, like this, you know, take back of the industry. I feel like you said, like, what ones do you. Do you support, and what industries do you not support? And I think most people would support a trend against consolidation if they knew about it.
If
they knew about, like, the negatives. Like, as an example, I mean, like, say for us, we're 5,300 small breweries strong, right? We don't have any efficiencies. We have to buy at full wholesale price for our grains, our hops. When we produce beer, you know, it's way more labor intensive than any AB InBev facility would ever have. But as a result, we employ, and these are facts, we employ over 130,000 people.
Right.
And statistically, for every new brewery, every new job that the craft beer industry creates, you add another job to the local agriculture, as well as other smaller industries that support us, like label producers. So, like, if you eliminate all that, you know, like, okay, we're not so efficient and we can't make beer so cheaply, but we keep 130,000 people, you know, getting a paycheck.
We're actually seeing a lot of that in craft distilling as well. As Jimmy mentioned, I'm a whiskey writer as well. The craft distilling
preeminent
has,
whiskey writer.
They have
author of Tasting Whiskey. My favorite whiskey.
Craft whiskey, a craft distilling has sparked this incredible resurgence of American grain growing. You know, I mean, there's a distiller near me is using locally grown rye from my county. I drive through the farm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And cheers, man. And we, you know, we like profits. We like America. And guess what? We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guess what, guys? It's our summer membership drive. Check us out at heritageradionetwork.org. It's so easy to become a member, and it comes with limited edition summer swag like T-shirts, drink koozies, and pins for your sweet jean vest. And really, go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airs this summer. So we're still talking again about this, like, Evil Empire acquisition of, you know, breweries, but more particularly the homebrew, online homebrew.
Can we? I'm sorry, I got to break in here because this beer we just poured, this is awesome. Bridge and Tunnel.
It's our
Bridge and Tunnel, buddy.
Our favorite New York City craft beer.
Coffee cream ale.
There you go, man.
This is really good.
Richie, how did you come up with the idea for this beer? I love it. I've had it many times.
Coffee cream? Well, 20 Spot. I probably told you the story. I did it for Ben and Jen at Queens Kickshaw, and I told Ben, he said, could you do a beer for our two-year anniversary? And I said, yeah, but you know how I roll at Bridge and Tunnel. Every beer has to have a story. So can you tell a story about something from your past? Because Ben grew up in Long Island City. So he came up with this story about he had this wild father. His dad was like an old punk rock dude who was personal friends with the Ramones, right? I met him for that, for their anniversary, and he – and basically, Ben used to get mugged on his way to school. So he told. So basically, Ben told him. He said, "You know, I have this problem. I'm getting mugged." And he was a kid. He was in, you know, like elementary school. So the father, raising him as a single dad, came up with the solution that he would send Ben to school with a knife in one pocket and a $20 bill in the other pocket. And he basically said, make your life decision.
Your choice.
Your choice. If you could take them, you have a knife to take them. If you can't take them, give them $20 bill. Give them the $20 bill and go to school. And Ben turned out to be an upstanding, highly educated, highly successful dude. And
with a $20 bill in his pocket.
And when I met his dad, I said, man, you got some really good, great parenting techniques.
Well, cheers to that. Queens Kickshaw and Astoria.
Yeah.
They also, their partners, they open in Wasail. They become leaders in the New York City cider community. And they're also a good Brazil bar at Queens Kickshaw. So, Richie, cool. You got some great stories. And, you know, again, why we love the homebrew. Let's go one more thing. So, Northern Brewers, you know, buying homebrew supplies online. You know, is that how most people buy their homebrew supplies? They shop online?
I think that's how most people are buying stuff in general. It's just that convenience. But to me, I'm like old fashioned. I miss going to the record store, you know, because that's where you find your new favorite band.
Well, you make friends too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, I like going to the old hardware store because I like talking to the crotchety old guy who calls you Mo because he knows, like, you're a union guy, you know? I miss that. I love that, you know? Me personally, especially as a small business owner, it's like, I don't mind driving 40 minutes an hour or whatever so I can support a local guy. I appreciate it more as, like, a small business owner, for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's that convenience. To me personally, could I do online stuff? Sure, but I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on someone walking in the door.
So then does it matter who owns Northern Brewer, the online homebrew supply company?
I mean, I think in the long run it kind of does because they have that FU money to kind of put the little guys out.
You know? And there's also who are they responsible to? You know, yeah. I mean, like, Northern Brewer used to be responsible to for their customers.
Well, then the other thing too is, like, I'll get phone calls from people. I bought a kit from Northern Brewer. I'm having a problem with it. It's like, well, did you try calling Northern Brewer? It's theirs. And they're like, well, no one's picking up the phone. Or no, like, they get like a lackadaisy kind of answer. And it's like, and I'm talking them off the ledge on how to make this beer, you know, and that's fine. You know, like, I'm trying to learn that, like, lure them to me with my,
it's got to hurt though.
It stings, you know.
Yeah.
I even have guys that come in because they'll buy a portion of their ingredients online, and I order fresh yeast every week, every other week, like liquid yeast. So that's, and to me, that's a loss leader. That's a draw to get people in, and like, they're buying packets of yeast, but they're not buying. It's like, I know you're making beer, and it even got to a point where I was like, well, what do I need to do to get your business? And it worked with some, you know, like some people like, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know, the yeast doesn't, buying a packet of yeast, well, I'm not making money. It's not keeping the lights on. I was like, I'm here for you on the weekend when something doesn't work out. You know, I'm here. I'm talking to you for 30 minutes on like processes or what's going on. You know, like I took the time to become like a certified beer judge. I did all this stuff because this is something I love doing. And, you know, is Northern Brewer there for you?
And see, and that's the thing, man. It's like, you know, you absolutely have a ton of value, you know, and it's like if we all get active in trying to get people to understand how they can hurt the local business, you know, it's like they don't seem to understand the impact that, you know, look, you're buying grains, you know, these guys are getting their grains in super sacks and then retailing them for X amount cheaper. You know, right. But really, who you hurt? You know, it's just, you know, they're securing economies of scale, scaling higher and higher by doing these mergers. They can take anybody out, and it's like, who's? Yeah, okay, you're making a couple of dollars on the short term. You know, you're saving a couple of dollars, but you're going to take a brick and mortar business out.
Well, not
that,
to mention
that is there, I mean, for you.
That's how monopolies work. Right. You take them out to begin with. With lower prices, and then when they're gone,
right, exactly,
jack it right up.
Well,
yeah.
The other thing too that makes me
did you make that noise, Lou?
I can do that as long as you want.
That's called live radio. I like that.
You know, I keep my prices on par with online retailers because that's my biggest competition. So it's not like I'm in Long Island, so you know you got to pay this extra premium, you know.
Can't do that.
No. Yeah. You know, it's like I'm on par. You know, I keep myself on par. You know, I don't have those higher profit margins. You know, I'm paying local taxes. I'm supporting the police. I'm supporting the fire department, getting your roads fixed. Northern Brewer doesn't do that stuff. And that's and even like the same thing with like stuff like Amazon too. It's like, yeah, you're getting it cheaper, but you know.
Yeah, the only people they're supporting is UPS.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and
even that had a recent, right, Whole Foods merged with,
right,
Amazon. Now they're talking about it's going to take away the supermarkets.
It's just scary to me when I drive around Long Island, I see all these empty retail spaces.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's going to happen? People are like, oh, my taxes are too high. Well, if they're not getting like that revenue from small businesses or sales tax, your property taxes are going to go up. So it's like, yeah, maybe you think you're saving a dollar or two here, but down the road, you're not, you know. You're going to price yourself out of these communities.
That's that 3-month horizon. You know, that's all the farther people can seem to look.
But that's at. That's a good perspective. And you know, quick backstory: why did you open a homebrew shop? Why did you open a small business at all?
Obviously, crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
I believe in them.
Well, I mean, de facto was I was a structural line worker. I was with Local 361. I was a structural line worker for 8 years. Previous to that, I worked for Coca-Cola and other evil empire, I guess. But you know,
can't get away from them.
No, but as an iron worker, I hurt my back. I herniated 3 discs in my back, and I had to go into early retirement. I had, you know, surgery, and no more humping, you know, steel, no more busting rivets, nothing like that. And I was a home brewer. I'm coming up to, you know, over 10 years of brewing, and you know, so I was. Oh, thank you. You know, I'm 35. My son's about to be born. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I thought I had my life figured out. I was like, I'm gonna be an iron worker, and I'm gonna support my family and all that other stuff. And then life happens. So the other thing too is like, in as I was saying earlier, Nassau County is kind of like this weird void for craft beer. So there really is no like, there was no like homebrew shops in the area. I was like, let's go for it. You know, nothing's going on over here. Let's give it a shot. It's something I love doing.
You're building a community.
Yeah. Well, that was organic. That wasn't something I was looking to, you know, well, you know, that wasn't in the plan. The plan was just getting the place up and try to make some money doing it, you know, like make like a decent living. I didn't go into it thinking like homebrewing's hot. I'm going to be
I will get rich.
Yeah. That was not even in my head.
Oh, that's good.
You know,
I'd be worried.
Well, because to me, it's like if you're going to open up a homebrew shop, that's the only hobby I've ever stuck with in my whole life, you know, is homebrewing.
And Richie, how did you meet Pete?
We have a mutual friend, actually. My friend John, who I kind of grew up with, is now helping me on Saturdays to brew beer. He's a MTA bus driver, and he lives out near Pete. And we all kind of
Baldwin, New York, Long Island,
that's
right?
South Shore. Baldwin. Yep.
Yeah. So like, he brought Pete in, and you know, now we're friends.
I want to thank you, Richie and Pete. You know, this is definitely an interesting conversation.
Sure.
It's most people aren't talking about these things. I think we got a little deeper. I'm always a fan of the small businesses. David, you're going to play a little funeral dirge for us. I'd like to tell you
there
that there was a time when all the good people came together and had homebrew shops and craft breweries and brew pubs. And we hope that that time won't end. But Lou, you brought in a bottle of the Wicked Weed from when they're independent.
It's
so it's okay to drink it.
Yeah. A friend of mine.
Check our Instagram because Richie posted a picture of a craft beer store that's selling Wicked Weed at discount.
Dirt cheap.
Actually, another brewer gave this to me, Sean Lilly Wilson from Full Steam down in Carolinas.
So what's the, this is one of the Wicked Weed Brett beers.
Yeah, he gave me one of the, what is it? The Wicked Weed's Britannomyces Farmhouse Ale fermented with peaches. And you know, it's really good. And it he gave it to me a week before the sale was announced. And I'm like, what do I do with this? Should I go and hit it with a hammer?
You know, you're a church singer, aren't you, Lou?
What? Yes, I am. Yeah.
You know the song Only on goes, Sundays?
So we're closing this one out, but pray for the dead, and the dead will pray for me. We kind of went dark on there. Thank you, Dave. But, you know, it's, I
if
guess.
I, if
know,
I could throw something about Wicked Weed real quick. You know, they have their Funkatorium. It's like a beer festival for sours. And right after that they sold,
people abandoned it.
50 breweries pulled out, and they created their own funk, basically that's called the Funk Collective. And July 7th, I believe it's going to be in North Carolina. So they're doing their alternative response to,
which
you
is
know,
cool. And it's also basically the same festival, the same breweries.
Right.
Except they stepped out.
And you know, like to sum it up, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, this is to some people a challenging issue. Other people, it's a non-issue. As I said, sometimes I get confused about which beers are independent and which beers are owned by AB InBev. And you know, I do care, and I care mostly about guys like Rich and guys like Pete that are making something that are paying their dues that means something. And,
hey, like I said, you know, if you want to know, just ask your phone. Google knows. All you got to do is ask.
Yeah, so we're getting behind. We want to drink craft. We're not drinking, you know, beers that are owned by AB InBev. And, you know, it goes up through the supply chain. But the last, again, you know, guys, thanks so much for helping put this show together. Lou, you came up from Pennsylvania. And, Richie, one last thing about this. So, you know, you're really passionate about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm passionate about it. I'll be honest. Years ago, I had a clothing business that I lost because of the same consolidation crap. And within 6 months, I didn't have my business. I relied on wholesale. And 6 months later, the 18 accounts that I had in New York City were all out of business. So it can happen. And it can happen in the United States again to the craft beer industry because it nearly happened in the 1970s. So let's follow the lead of some of these other bigger breweries and start making a stink about it, start making a statement, maybe start educating our own customers in our own tap rooms, and let's turn it around.
They ain't going to care if they don't know.
That's right.
And I'll tell you, as part of that, coming up in July, it's our ninth annual New York City July Good Beer Month. I mean, we co-created it. We do special shows for Beer Sessions Radio. We give out the annual Good Beer Seal Awards for beer bars, recognizing some of the best events at tasting rooms in New York City. So big shout out to everybody, and thanks for coming on. Once again, everybody say their full name, and we'll go around the room.
Lou Bryson, beer writer, whiskey writer, author of Tasting Whiskey.
Rich Castagna, Bridge and Tunnel Brewery.
Peter Tripp, Homebrews and Hand Grenades.
All right, you guys, thanks for coming out. And I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, intern Hillary Fasten, and engineer David Tadisher, extraordinaire. And thanks for joining me on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo, woo.
Yeah, baby.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.